final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long, I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Cause you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women, old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway night, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Of the United States it alarmed me that a little country over in the Far East could actually cripple the United States. And realizing that the entire industrial base of the United States and the world is based on the supply and the utilization of energy, it became imperative that we must try to bring in an alternate fuel source and do it very quickly. Of course, I thought originally with the right type of funding, we could possibly get it in within 6 months. But reality shows that the 12 to 15 years was more correct in this projection.
Back in the 70s, Stan Meyer set out single-handedly to solve America's energy problems. He decided to do it using water, the world's most abundant storehouse of hydrogen, which is a far more powerful fuel than oil. For 15 years, Meyer has been fighting to get his inventions taken seriously.
Most inventors have to be a loner. You have to be somewhat thick-skinned and don't rely on other people to support you, because they will not. More times than not, an invention is really stolen from the inventors. Even in my prior development of high technology, I've had patents taken from me. I learned from the School of Hard Knocks to be very cautious.
Meyer has always stood out against the crowd. He has no formal qualifications as a scientist because he didn't wait to graduate from high school, leaving early to go straight into research at the high-powered Battelle Institute in his native Ohio. Now he works full-time as a private inventor. He's built a device with potentially revolutionary implications. There is nothing startling about a machine that can extract the hydrogen from water. What is highly unusual is that it should do so with ordinary tap water. The conventional method is called electrolysis. Meyer has turned that process on its head. Unlike electrolysis, his device doesn't use up large amounts of electric current, nor does it produce an enormous amount of waste heat. For 20 years, he has been refining a method to fracture water, which produces vast amounts of hydrogen on demand. This is not his latest apparatus. He was unwilling to let us point a camera at that. This is the simple device he used to convince a reluctant patent office that his revolutionary concept actually works. Alloy rods, acting as electrodes, are housed in a perspex container that's filled with water. Normal mains voltage is fed in through a transformer, but critically, there is virtually no current consumed, less than half an amp. The result is dramatic. Hydrogen pours off with a flick of a switch. Meyer claims the key is his electronics, which pulses electricity rapidly across the rods at up to 20,000 cycles per second. In a way that's not readily apparent, this process transforms the equation. Whereas in conventional electrolysis, three times as much energy is consumed as is produced in the form of hydrogen fuel, in Meyer's apparatus, the reverse is true. It appears to produce several 100% more energy than it consumes.
Stan has something that's characteristic of the people that sound like they've done something to tap zero-point energy. It has high frequency, high voltage, and there's a combination of the two at which something occurs. With Chernetsky in Russia, it was what he called a self-sustaining discharge. The tube would run by itself. When Stan gets this effect, the amount of hydrogen and oxygen that are emitted off these two electrodes is a step function. It almost boils the water. If I did this with standard electrochemicals, I need current. And the water should rise a degree every couple of seconds. With Stan's, it'll run for a half hour, and the water temperature hasn't changed. Something's different.
Meyer demonstrates this repeatedly without any difficulty, and yet on the face of it, it represents an extraordinary revolution. His measurements over the years suggest 1,700% greater efficiency than conventional electrolysis. And if he's to be believed, he's getting much better results from his latest, still secret invention.
Well, I first got involved with Stan Meyer when I went over there with a couple of colleagues to look at his water-splitting device. And so we arrived at Stanley Meyer. He had a demonstration cell. We filled it with tap water. In fact, I did that myself. And he switched it on, and almost instantly, the three jaws dropped because of the rate at which the gas poured off. It was quite spectacular.
Whatever energy source Stan Meyer had tapped, it was not explicable by the electric power that was going into it. So something was powering it outside of conventional wisdom.
There is no question that the gas coming off in such abundance is hydrogen. Mara ignites it to produce a high-temperature flame able to cut through metal.
Stanley Mayer has faced a lot of difficulties. He's three times tried to launch the device and produce press conferences at the technical press round, but he's been almost universally slated. In the early days, very much so, they just ridiculed the whole idea. He's getting a little more notice now because some scientists are getting interested. But by and large, science is very intolerant, particularly modern science.
As with Tesla, Griggs and others, Mayer's claims are so far outside the received scientific wisdom that they've been ignored by the majority of the scientific establishment. But then, Mayer has ignored them too. He has poured his energies over the last 10 years into establishing recognition for his claims by getting international patents.
In the processing, there was a great deal of difficulty in trying to process the legal paperwork in such a way as to allow the patent office to fully understand what was actually occurring. In one instant, we brought the water fuel cell to Washington, D.C., and of course I had tweaked it in such a way to produce an enormous amount of hydrogen oxygen gas, and the patent examiner said, no, it will not work based on the electrolysis process. And when we turned it on and produced the enormous amount of hydrogen gas, the examiner finally realized that we were doing exactly that, and went out in the hallway and started screaming and hollering to everybody on the floor, put out all your cigarettes, hydrogen's in the building. So we started laughing and said, well, we certainly convinced everybody in the patent office that we can do what we said we can do.
Even so, the U.S. Patent Office dragged their feet for 3 years before granting patents on the hydrogen-producing device. Since then, against massive resistance, he's managed to get patents established throughout Europe and Japan. But the hydrogen machine was only the first step towards Mayer's ultimate dream. If he gets it right, this application of his technology would change the 21st century in the same way that the Wright brothers and Carl Benz transformed the 20th. He is currently modifying a beach buggy to run on nothing but water. It doesn't have a petrol tank or even a hydrogen container. It has just a tank of water. He's invented a device called a water splitter to replace the spark plug. As the water is injected into the engine, Mayer claims it's fractured into hydrogen and oxygen and then burned as fuel. Mayer is working on a kit to modify any engine. He hopes to demonstrate it on this car within 12 months.
And of course, the blessing to the use of the water as a fuel source, that on combustion, the byproduct is water mist. So we're even solving the environmental pollution problem at the same time that we're using water to maintain the industrial basis of the world.
Mayer is protective about his inventions to the point of self-confessed paranoia. Most observers describe him as a crank and his car as an aberration. But then madness and genius often go hand in hand. Mayer shares with many inventors a problem that goes well beyond paranoia. As an engineer with no scientific background, he faces a giant hurdle when he tries to communicate with scientists.
One problem is that the language that people use when they're trying to describe their inventions is not the language that I as a scientist am used to, and so I have to translate it, if you like, into a way that I can begin to understand what they're trying to say. It might as well be written in Swahili for all of the sense that it initially makes, and so I'm not particularly inspired to put a lot more effort in the hope that the pearl of wisdom will reveal itself to me.
Remember crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Give me the number for 911, too. So, hey, everybody, you're listening to Mad Science over at ShazizRadio.com. If you want to come over and socialize, you can jump over there to www.ShazizRadio.com/superchat.html. That's where you get to talk to the Awake Radio crew over there on their side, too. It's two chat rooms in one. Pretty nifty little deal. Anyway, I posted a few links inside the chat room over there in the super chat room. One of them is Lid Motor. He does these nifty little pill bottle motors where he takes pill bottles and he makes little static motors and static generators and little electric pulse motors and stuff like that. But he does a lot of really incredible work with on a small scale of what I feel like could be done on a larger scale. There's a motor out there called a red line generator. It's a 12 volt to 120 volts at 500 watts. The phone companies and light companies use them on their trucks. So you run heavy amp alternators to run these things, to run big lighting systems so that they can work, you know, out in either bad weather or in the dark, so they can see what they're doing. And they're pretty impressive little deals. If you go back and you look at my video called Electron 1 and Electron 2, you'll see one of them being a go-kart that I use them things on, and one of them being an electric motorcycle that I use them things on. And essentially, you take a 12-volt system and you are running 120 volts AC. It's just a motor generator. But as I watch Lid Motor's little nifty gizmos that he puts together all the time, I keep coming up with all these doggone ideas on how to literally build these, you know, in themselves. There's folks out there to take three-phase motors and they turn them into permanent magnet motors, and they'll use one phase to run the motor and then they'll use the other phases for a generation portion. I honestly think that if the work was done and it was engineered properly, that could actually work. But one of the things that one of the other links that I put in there is one that Laser Hacker over at remstar.org put on there about some supercapacitors made out of a couple aluminum plates, some activated carbon, and I believe he used sulfuric acid in the process, and he made some pretty impressive little capacitors. Robert Murray Smith, who I talk about on here all the time, is doing a lot of graphene technology. As far as I'm concerned, he's pretty much leading the pack of the graphene technology. He does some really impressive stuff. But if you can get really good battery systems designed, and essentially that's what I think the supercapacitor is capable of doing. Actually, there's a video out there where a man took some supercapacitors and basically made a power pack and took the car battery out of his car and used the, instead of a 20-pound battery, used a 2-pound capacitor bank and used it as the battery and was able to start the car. And then the alternator was actually charging the capacitor bank back up, and he shut it down. 3 days later, went back out there to see if it would start up again, and sure enough, it did. So, I believe that with the right technology, such as what I mentioned there with Laser Sabers doing those capacitors, supercapacitors, which to me it's more like a battery technology, but it's still, you know, still capacitor. And
so this,
yeah,
just on the basis of the supercaps, I had a buddy in Ireland that built one of these systems using Philips supercaps, and basically what he said is the supercaps were less prone to voltage drainage in cold temperatures.
Well, that's another plus. I hadn't even heard about that, but you know, I see just what I've seen so far, there's a lot of benefits in there. And if you could better...
There are some inherent flaws.
Yeah?
Once you charge your supercap and you release all the energy from it, it's gone. So you kind of need the alternator to charge it back up again. It's not as though you've got a battery that you can remove that will store power.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, but I don't know if you heard of them. They've actually got batteries with built-in capacitors in them over here. They use for, like, I believe in diesel engine, big diesel trucks or something like that, so that they have like a really heavy-duty punch to, you know, to start.
Oh yeah, well, it's what they call the cold cranking amps.
Yeah,
the CCA. What they were finding was the supercap replacement batteries were great for starting in cold weather, and this was kind of borne out by a bit of Russian research as well when they're going out into the real cold areas of there, that yeah, it would turn over the engine and get it started, but if you didn't hit it on the second or third try, that was it, it was dead.
Yeah, well, so, I guess where I'm leading with this is that. And when I look at Lid Motors, the little micro-sized motors that he works on, is basically the one that I put in the chat room, is like a pulse motor style deal, where he's got a couple coils on the outside, and then he's got a neodymium magnet on the inside for the rotor. And when I look at this, and I think about that that graphene technology, this capacitor technology, I'm thinking to myself, Why can't you just build into the motor itself a battery, you know, and be able to have this rotor while it's being run by the pulse circuit, have a couple extra coils in there that is feeding back into that battery. So I guess at the very, very least, it would be a more efficient electric motor if done properly. If engineered, you could literally build a self-running motor. I get myself in trouble saying stuff like that all the time because, you know, they always talk about the laws of physics and, you know, all the losses that comes into it and so on and so forth. But to take that a step even further and to, you know, put another egg in the basket, so to speak, instead of, you know, putting all your... Well, I just kind of said that backwards. Instead of putting all your eggs in one basket, you use all these different technologies in conjunction with one another. I see actually taking using some high voltage and some plasma technology as well into that same doggone motor. I could visualize a super engineered electric motor that would have its own onboard power source and be able to not invoke certain laws of physics when you don't want them to, if you understand what I'm trying to say here.
So basically what you're trying to do is to get the laws of nature to jump to the crack of your whip.
Well, pretty much, you know, working with it, you know, as opposed to against it. We know what happens, you know, when Lenz law takes place. The heavier load you put on it, the harder that thing has to work, and eventually the force is overcome, and it, you know, it bogs down, and it's no longer efficient. But why not engineer it properly from the get-go? And there's actually rotor technology out there that is already in play that people have done where, instead of the standard kind of rotor, they got this offset rotor that kind of cuts through the field at an angle as opposed to, you know, directly. And so, if pulsed at the right time, you know, you get a super efficient motor generator out of this deal. So
see, that's where we miss Muddy, because Muddy's really the rotor guy.
Yeah, he's done some pretty impressive work. I keep talking about putting together the dream team. I wish this could be accomplished. I wish I could get all these people. Here recently, I actually met up with a guy. I got to go back in time here a second. I met up with a guy over at the church function doing alternative energy research, and I do a little display on there every year for him, you know, showing people how to, you know, do solar and wind power and different technologies that are out there, and talk to him about my research and stuff like that. Well, I met one particular individual there who was really interested in it, and about a week ago, I was up to a machine shop. There's a local machine shop up here, but normally they don't mess around with anything unless there's a whole lot of money involved in this deal. You know, they won't take on you know, small clients. They got large contracts that they work on. And so anyway, I was trying to get a meeting with these guys, and when I talked to one of the second in command up there, is more or less that's what he said to me that discouraged me from actually, you know, bothering them any further. Well, ironically enough, about a week or so ago, the guy that I met at the church episode, he shows back up, and just so happens, he wanted me to meet up with another guy who's doing research in water purification. And so this other guy, he's got some connections with some pretty big name companies out there, but he also has connections with the same machine shop that I was trying to get in contact with to have some parts put together. And the guy that I met at the church function, he was putting us together because they were trying to figure out ways in which they could reduce the BTUs, the energy that it takes to create the BTUs to do the process that they're working on. And he felt like my research and his research combined could actually do something. So actually got a ball rolling on that, and maybe possibly my foot in the door on a really good machine shop. They have every single tool to make anything you can possibly imagine. And so
Shaziz,
yeah,
for the listeners out there that are not familiar with the term BTU, is the basic thermal unit. It's what the most heating systems, whether it be oil, solar, water, they're all based on a BTU, basic thermal unit.
Yeah, and so with that said, the biggest portion of your heating bill out there is heat, or that's the biggest portion of your energy bill is heat, you know. And your lighting is one of the other reasons why, because essentially if you're using like tungsten element light bulbs, that's producing a lot of heat, which eventually you know, uses up a lot of electricity. Now Raymond's into doing these new LED bulbs instead of even the fluorescent bulbs. They're even more efficient than the fluorescent bulbs. So by reducing how much heat you're or how you're getting your heat energy, then you can reduce your energy bill. Well, with my plasma technology that I've been talking about forever and a day, I feel like I can help him solve that problem at the same time, be able to get some pretty cool things out there for everybody to be able to use. So with that said, you want to touch on those new LED systems that you're working on, Raymond?
Yeah, just a little bit. It's a replacement bulb. It's exactly the same length, everything works the same way. It's just it's got little LEDs in it. And man, they use so little electricity, it is unbelievable. And yet they give off more light. I've tested the lumens, I tested the wattage, and I set them up. Okay, you get T12 replacement bulbs. There's kind of two different ways. You can get them with a clear plastic where you can actually see the LEDs inside, and then they come with opaque plastic, which gives you a much softer light. So I set up three fixtures with four bulbs in each one. One fixture had regular T8 bulbs, and the one fixture had the LED replacements with the frosted plastic, and the third one had the clear plastic where you could see it. The fluorescent used 112 watts for four bulbs and gave off 1,250 lumens. The LED replacements with the frosted lids gave off 1,450 watts and 1,400 watts even. I mean, it 1,400 lumens, I'm sorry, and it used 69 watts. Now, the LED replacement with the clear face, wow, it was still 69 watts, but it gave off 1,780 lumens, almost 50% more than the fluorescence.
Well,
only half of the electricity used.
Raymond, I've done extensive research on fluorescent strips. Just to put that into perspective, a 13-watt T5 fluorescent strip will put out about 850 lumens at a 4,000 Kelvin spectrum, which is germinating vegetables, basically. But if you're talking about up into the 15, 1700s, that's kind of impressive from an LED.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yes.
The
clear ones that you can see the LEDs in, you're talking 50% more lumens. So consequently, really, I actually did the test. I did one bulb, and I still got more lumens from three bulbs. I got about 150 lumens more than four fluorescent bulbs. The thing is, when you undo one of those four clear ones, then your wattage drops to 51 watts, less than half of the electricity, and yet you're still getting 100 to 150 more lumens.
Well, that's that brings up one of the things, the reason what I wanted to point out about the technology that I've been talking about is because fluorescent bulbs, believe it or not, are sort of reliant on heat, because you have to warm up the gas inside there, and especially in cold temperatures. You know, if you got a super high voltage running through there, you don't have to worry about heating up the gas, because it's like almost instantaneous it starts to produce heat.
You mentioned instantaneous, okay, because I've noticed that the bulbs that I have replaced in my shop, I've replaced everything in my office, but out in my shop, I'm about a third of the way through replacing them. I've got a lot more fluorescent lights out there. But the one thing I noticed, everybody says that LEDs are instantaneous. No, they're not. Hey, my fluorescent lights in my shop, I turn them on, and it's a millisecond, and they're on. But the LEDs, you turn the switch on, and it takes about a quarter of a second for them to come on.
Yeah, but my point is this: with LEDs aren't reliant on a lot of current flow. All they need is the electron flow. When the electrons interact with the materials in there, it releases photons of light, and so that's what makes them so super efficient. And if you go back and look at that video that I did with spinning up the hard drive, the hard drive motor, I was running a complete strand of LEDs with a computer hard drive, you know, and there's not enough power to speak of in the hard drive motor to, like, let's say, turn another electric motor or something like that, because you don't got a lot of current going on there. But you do got a lot of high voltage, and that voltage is the only thing that LED is looking for. And so if you was going to do something like an emergency backup generator system, your best bet would be the LED system, because the fluorescence, unless you're running like an oil burner igniter like I'm talking about, a 20,000 volt oil burner igniter, then those normal fluorescent bulbs are reliant on heat. You know, they have a tungsten element inside that bulb that is a preheater for that bulb to heat that gas up inside there. So that's going to take energy to do that. Now, we're able to light these things without, even when that tungsten elements burn up, we're still able to light these things because we send a high frequency, a high voltage wave through that gas and energize it anyway. But as far as emergency lighting, from what I've seen so far, you can't beat the LED systems. Would you agree or disagree with that, Raymond?
I agree completely, totally.
So if you want to build a generator and you want it to be efficient, then LED is going to be the best way to go as far as the lighting. Now, this brings us back down to your other major cost, which is heating. Now, heat is light and light is heat. That's what the physics says.
I watched the YouTube video a good while back, and it was kind of an eye-opener for me. And it's kind of basic stuff, but I never considered it, that your thermometer is not a rating of temperature, it's a rating of energy.
Well, actually, what's going on inside there, there's actually pressure buildup inside there. When that mercury begins to heat up inside there, it starts to pressurize. That's what causes it to rise up. So,
you know, you said that light and light is heat, and you've said it at least 100 times that I've heard you say it. And I believe that. I really do. I believe that they are interchangeable, but however, the light spectrum is such that, we only see, 10% of the light spectrum? But there's other light spectrums, like, for example, the way you explained lighting up the fluorescent bulbs with high voltage, like 20,000 volts, and I did some experiments with that, and I made videos put them on YouTube. I have 10 4-foot T8 fluorescent light fixtures, lighting them up with 20,000 volts. I had them light them up for 10 minutes, laid my hand on them, and the bulbs were cold to the touch.
Well, yeah, it's basically insulated, but the glass, the fluorescent bulbs don't get real hot. But if you pay attention to them in your house there, if you look at them, you'll notice there's some black crud up in the bad ones where they had got hot and burnt that element up in there. All right,
yeah, exactly. But here's this. The thing is, the way you've explained to me how the 20,000 volts will light up a fluorescent light that did burn out makes sense, because you told me that the 20,000 volts excites the gas inside, makes it bump into itself, builds a certain amount of heat, and it gives off infrared light, which you cannot see.
Well,
however, that infrared light excites that white powder fluorescent on the inside of the bulb and changes the infrared light into visible light.
Well, just
that
like, is just
what
like
I
you,
see, it does not make heat.
Just like you said. Just like you said, there are multiple spectrums. Doggone it. Come on, man. Can you guys add Thomas in here? Like you said, there are multiple spectrums of frequencies of light. So there is dark light, literally. I mean, as stupid as that may sound, there is dark light. There are frequency ranges that are you can't see. Like, you can't see infrared, all right? Unless you have certain materials that will interact with it or whatever, you can't see it. But regardless, nonetheless, it's still, there's still heat involved in there. And so if you can see it, like just like the sun, you know, if you can see it, there's heat. There's heat going on. That when you're energizing that noble gas into a plasma state, the only reason why that's occurring is because it's creating friction, which in turn is creating heat, and you're starting to be able to see that. The higher you energize that, the brighter that will get. I've literally seen argon gas in pure white, just like a light bulb. You raise that frequency range up there, and that will keep getting brighter. It'll start off at a light purple, and it'll work its way all the way up to a super white, bright light, and that is seriously hot. So, whether it's the process of getting the light, or, you know, physics says it's heat. You know, light is heat, and heat is light. So, that's what I'm basing my research off of, the plasma technology. All right, you know, in open air, they got plasma cutters out there that can cut through steel. All right, so there's a lot of heat involved there if you can cut through steel.
I've got a couple of plasma cutters right here.
Yeah, so you know they work. You know, they're impressive. Great. But that same plasma inside a vacuum where it's contained as opposed to being out in the atmosphere, number one, is going to be a whole lot more stable, you know. I listen to plasma cutters on, you know, whenever they're running these things. They got a distinct noise to them as they're, you know, buzzing through that deal. There's a whole lot of atmosphere interacting with that cutter, if you know what I mean. So,
you know, the amazing thing about plasma cutter knobs is this.
Yeah.
I use a wooden yardstick as a guide.
Yeah.
For my plasma cutter, it's a straight line, and I mean, it's cutting like 3/32 of an inch away from that piece of wood, and yet it does not burn, doesn't even scorch that wood, but it'll cut right through a piece of 1/8-inch steel.
So,
that's amazing to me.
The plasma is not as hot as you think it is. It's just the electron flow that's going into the steel. And it's melting the steel, and because the rod that you're using for your arc isn't depositing anything back into it, it literally just blows the steel out, and there's nothing to replace it. It's basically arc welding a piece of steel without any metal to weld it together. So instead of welding it together, it's cutting it apart.
Yeah.
There's a difference in voltages and temperatures and all that kind of stuff, but still.
Beautiful thing about plasma cutters is if it will conduct electricity, a plasma cutter will cut it. Where with acetylene or propane torch or whatever, I mean, you like lead, you can use a torch on it, but all you're going to do is melt it. You know, you don't actually burn it. And brass, aluminum, stuff like that, it's hard to use a propane torch. But a plasma cutter, it doesn't even know the difference.
Well, I'm thinking we're probably got some sort of little disagreement going here, because I'm 100% positive that inside that plasma there's heat going on, you know, and I guess my technology, we're actually building a second plasma reactor like what I started to do, and I watched that thing literally, the first one, I watched it literally destroy itself from the inside out.
I think the thing is for the plasma to exist, it doesn't require it to be hot. You can get it hot, it'll contain a lot of heat, but when you're running a plasma cutter, you're not pumping the energy into the plasma, it's just a conduit to pump it into the metal.
Yeah, well,
so when you're charging it, it's becoming basically like a lightning path.
Let's just say hypothetically what you're talking about is correct. I won't argue one way or another, but if there's not heat there, there has to be a magnetic field being going on. There has to be.
I wouldn't doubt it at all. That's probably why he has to use wood and not use a piece of aluminum, because it would probably arc off to the side there because of that magnetic charge and attract the electrons that are flowing through that plasma straight into the aluminum because it's got a higher conductivity rate.
Because I
have used aluminum three-sixteenths inch thick aluminum flat bar. And it worked great. The only thing is, you were right, it has a tendency to stick to the aluminum. But all I did was take some heat-resistant paint and paint the aluminum.
So you put a barrier so that the electrons couldn't flow through the into the aluminum. You create a dielectric effect.
So what? Exactly. So once again, you're still going to, regardless of whether what you're saying is right or what I'm talking about is right, regardless of what it's saying, you're going to get the same result out of the deal. Because if there is a magnetic field being created right. within that plasma, you can create eddy currents within a metal to cause that metal to heat up. And then that
right.
that would be what would be going on with a plasma cutter.
You know what I'm wondering? Hold on a second. You're using electron flow to generate your plasma, right?
Yep.
High voltage electron flow?
Yep.
Have you thought about trying to use a high-speed magnet that's passed a wheel with magnets on it to charge that plasma instead?
Well, yeah, I've actually contemplated on that too, but the only thing is I don't know what the breakdown temperature of the magnet's going to be. Like how, you know, if you heat a magnet up, it loses its magnetism, you know.
But if you're not inside the plasma field, if you're outside of it, remember what I said about neodymiums are not as good at controlling things with a high magnetic field from a distance as ceramic ferrite magnets. The trick to using those would be, don't just shove them in a piece of aluminum or something and expect them to be very strong. You want to put a steel cup around them so that basically all the magnetic field that's coming out of the backs, the sides, and the centers of them is pushed out to one point, and you'll get a pretty strong field, but it should have some pretty long distance. So you can set it back a little bit from the ball outside of it and just spin that thing around there.
Well, that would be
a glass chamber, and punching through that and through the air in between it and the plasma chamber, and just bang, go.
That would be easy enough to test. I could actually build a really quick device to test that concept if I could actually energize the argon with a couple magnetic discs. And I actually potentially spin one in the opposite direction to mix it up real good, spin the other one in the other direction, and, you know, one counterclockwise and one clockwise to get like a vortex of that magnetic field going on inside there could literally raise the frequency up if that's what's going on inside that deal with plasma being a magnetic field. Then you should be able to energize it into the plasma state and get that visible light plus the heat involved in there. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. It's definitely something worth looking into.
Well, see, this is why I don't mind this debate going on here, because I don't have to be right on what I'm talking about. But what you're talking about and what I'm talking about is turning light bulbs on. Using these things in conjunction with each other, this is how you find out the solutions to what it is you're trying to accomplish here. You see what I mean?
Yeah, the only difference between us and big corporations is we're not sitting around in the same room shooting rubber band guns at each other while we're trying to think up ideas.
Yeah. But anyway, so back to the subject at hand, if we rethink on how we're actually getting our energy, you know, the heat is the biggest portion. That's the biggest problem right there, is that it costs you more to make the doggone heat. And so if you can figure out a way to heat water or even heat your house without having to draw so much energy, I feel like we've already got it figured out on the lighting on the lighting portion of it. So there's a big chunk of your light bill gone as long as you use that technology. Now, the biggest deal would be how to heat your house, you know, or how to cool it in the summertime. There's all kinds of heat exchanger technology out there that you could actually use to in conjunction with what we're talking about. You see what I'm trying to say here?
Yeah.
So if this plasma technology does what I believe it's capable of, you know, based off of everything I've seen from the plasma cutter to fluorescent lighting and how you can energize gas into the plasma state using nothing more than high voltage, it don't take a lot of current flow in order to produce high voltage. I mean, I've done it with a 1.5 volt battery. You know, I've energized gas into the plasma state with a pen light battery, a little AAA. I did a video on it, and so I know that I can get that high voltage that I need started off at a really, you know, low input. And so if it only takes 1.5 volts to get it kicked into the plasma state, you imagine if you took one of those X13s or one of these Fisher & Paykel or Samsung direct drive stator motors that they got in the front loader washing machine. Spin that thing up to over 5,000 RPMs and you're going to be producing some massive amounts of arcs off of that thing. If that can't put some hot plasma out there, then nothing can. Any thoughts?
Yeah. I don't want to change the subject or anything, but I want to say something to Thomas. Thomas, have you ever seen a ceramic magnet that was only magnetic on one side?
Not quite, but if you notice the magnets that are inside of speakers, you have a magnetic field that's coming out the sides, and then you have a magnet, there's like next to no magnetic field coming out of the front or the back of them because of the plates they put on there, but there's a ton of magnetic field coming out of right around the center where the voice coil slides down in between there, because it pushing all that from the top and the bottom into the center.
Let me tell you what I did. I took those 1-inch by 2-inch by 3/8-inch thick ceramic magnets that you buy at Home Depot, and then I took the same size magnet, neodymium, that was a lot stronger, and I put the two poles alike together so I pushed them apart, but I forced them together and slid it one time, and it demagnetized that side but not the other side of the ceramic magnet. One side was magnetized, and
What happened? Did I lose you guys? Alright, well, let me see if I can get these two back in here. Yeah, apparently, when Steve was hosting the call there, he had to drop off, and so we lost you guys. I'm trying to add Raymond back in here. So this is good for live radio. So, how about them Chiefs?
Yeah.
Oh, man. There we go. I think
get
I...
Them in there.
I hope so. Oh, I've got it. See if you can add him in.
Yeah, I just tried.
It's obnoxious, man. Raymond, are you there yet? Can you hear me now?
Hold on. He's still trying to call him.
All right. Well, he's still trying to call the other one.
Yeah.
Do. This is exciting. There he is. All right.
Yeah, I think I got bumped off the air.
Can you hear me now?
I got bumped off. Steve hung up on us. He was hosting the call, apparently.
Yeah, Steve was hosting the call when he bailed. You guys got dumped, and I called you back, and then you tried to call me, and then Tom tried to add you. And hey, nothing like technology.
Telephone tag.
So, where were we before the shenanigans?
Oh. Y'all were talking about plasma and all this.
Alright, so basically, I got access now to a machine shop. If everything works out right, I can actually get some doggone things built that need to be built. Pretty much, the individual that's wanting me to help out with the lab and all that, he's talking about being able to, you know, get the necessary funding to do the research that we want to do. So there's a plus in the alternative energy world. You know, I saw a video here just recently about one of the guys out there. I'm not even going to mention him by name or anything like that, but it's unfortunate. You know, a really brilliant individual with some personal problems and stuff like that, but there's a whole lot of controversy going on out there in the alternative energy community. And, you know, a lot of folks put a lot of effort towards helping each other out and trying to get together and build these groups up, and inevitably something or someone comes along and it pretty much destroys the whole entire process, and then now everybody's spending their time feuding amongst each other and wasting time on the whole alternative energy research. You know, it's disheartening, because I feel like we got every single thing we need right now. We have all the answers to all the different technologies out there to literally build what it is that everybody keeps saying they want. Now, the green industry, the green energy people out there, you know, it's all the information you need to get to give them exactly what they want is here. Now, somebody got to come together at some point in time. They got to do something. You know, they got to get something going on. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing on my side, and I'm going to keep working on my research on that part there. But in the meantime, there are solutions out there on the table right now, such as the LED technology. That'll save you on your light bill, all right? The working on different forms by which to heat your home would also be very beneficial on your light bill. There's so many different things, everything from hydrogen technology to wood gasifiers, Stirling engines. I could just go on and on. All this technology.
You know what I'm really surprised about?
What?
There's not more excitement about that paint on heater that Robert Murray Smith made, and get involved in basically making that as efficient as possible, and then using that under floors. Like, you know, you got a hardwood floor, you put down a vinyl tile or something like that, and then you put on top of that something that's basically resistive also, you know, it's not conductive and can handle some heat, and then put carpet down and you adjust the temperature of that so it heats the floor when you walk on it just to the right temperature for your feet.
Well, it would be brilliant. I mean, look at we've got heated mirrors already. All right, there's heated mirror technology out there, and if you ever broke one of those heated mirrors and inspected, peeled off the back, you'll find out it's essentially like a heating element built into a plastic type material.
Mm-hmm.
And if you made a pads to go all the way through your entire house on the floor, everybody knows basic science, heat rises. You mm-hmm. could literally put it underneath the carpet in your deal. They use it to thaw off your ice on your mirror in the wintertime, so you know it's doing pretty good.
Right. You could do this too to most tubs. You could literally paint the underside of the tub with this stuff in that configuration, so when you charge it, it heats the tub up. I don't know how many times have people sat down in a cold climate in a tub of hot water and lean back against the portion of the tile that the tub's made out of that's not underwater, and it just, you know, it's a shock.
Yeah.
There's people that would pay for that, you know, to go away.
Well, and there's another key that you happen to mention there, Thomas. There's a lot of different possibilities for new products to actually come on the market. I mean, good, honest products like that. If you had the system that you could put behind the tiles in your wall and be able to heat it so that somebody sitting in the bathtub ain't going to get that cold shock down their back as soon as they lean against the wall, you're right. There's a market out there for that, you know? And
if you're using tile, you know how easy it is to make tile. I mean, all you need is a kiln.
Yeah.
So you can literally make, if you put the right stuff on it, you can literally bake, I'm guessing, some of those compounds they make graphene out of into graphene through the induction heat from the kiln itself while the tile is heating up to turn it from a clayware into a porcelainware. And then, boom, you have a tile that has a built-in filament that all you have to do is basically tap onto that, and that tile becomes a heater.
Yeah.
Then you just ring those all together while you're grounding it all together, and boom, you've got a whole wall that generates heat. The heater now is built into the wall instead of taking up space somewhere.
Hey, Thomas, how about we do your idea and then put piezo crystals on top of it, so when you walk on the piezo crystals, they make the electricity to cause the heat to go into the ceramic top.
Well, then you got to walk on that cold tile floor to get it to warm up. But the piezo tweeters, piezo generators, if you have a storage bank for that to all be dumped into, so that whenever it is cold and the thermostat kicks it on to allow that power to flow through those tiles, it could become your a way to basically turn any kind of vibrations, especially like if you live near somebody, like in an apartment building where the people like to, you know, raise cane and play, have loud parties and play music late at night and during the day and wherever. All that sound gets turned into electricity for you to heat your place then, at least.
What about taking a really busy highway and making it out of piezo crystals?
Actually, I think you could probably mount them underneath the underside of the highway, like on bridges and stuff like that, just to start and give it a show to show how it works.
Just think about that a minute. With all the bridges there are in the United States, we probably wouldn't have to buy any more electricity.
The technology's already there. The little kids already got them in tennis shoes, little lights right up there. But just imagine if you had a product such as what we're talking about, where you can heat your from your floor, but also within that same product, you also had the piezoelectric system that was, you know, trickle charging the doggone super cap slash battery bank. That would be at the very least emergency backup for your LED lighting in your house. That system right there, you know, where you're always telling the kids not to be running in the house, you could encourage them to run in the house all the time.
Well, you just put them in one area and encourage them to run in that area.
Yeah. Because
there's nothing for them to destroy and nothing to get hurt on.
Yeah.
There you go.
So there's pluses out of that deal. I guess just what frustrates me is the common sense dictates. You got all this doggone knowledge out here of all these different technologies to combine together. There could be so many jobs created by bringing the right people together and working on these technologies. And if these folks out here are so worried about the world and needs to be save the planet kind of the scenario, then what are we waiting on? Now, what are they waiting on? Why aren't people out there supporting all these ideas out here? And I ain't talking about the knuckleheads out there trying to scam people for money. You know, that's another thing about the alternative energy community that frustrates the heck out of me, is you got individuals out there that are trying to get filthy rich off of them, you know?
Hey, listen, man, something people have to understand. Those people trying to scam people on alternative energy, they've got alternative energy scams, or they're running a scam on a legitimate alternative energy, like they're trying to get funding and they're just going to run off with it. They're not going to actually use it for the research that they say they're going to do. They're not part of the alternative energy. That's like saying a shark that's swimming around a school of fish is one of the fish. It's not.
Well, and I agree. It's just
an invader.
It's just that from the outside looking in, it's like
us look bad. You gotta educate people that they're not part of the crowd. Those types of people exist in every community.
See,
they find schools of fish and they feed on them.
If you go
There's
to
no
my,
way to get away from that.
If you go to my YouTube channel, it says search for free energy. All right, and I ain't trying to sell nobody nothing out there. I'm just trying to put some ideas down on the table that people can use to you know, spark off some more ideas to actually get things accomplished. But while I haven't been able to produce the holy grail of electric, what would you call it, electric generator, you know, free energy generator or something like that, at the very least, you know, with this radio show and the doggone YouTube channel combined, I've been able to point out some things that are already in existence that you could at the very least benefit by reducing your doggone light bill. So I don't think that it's been totally non-productive what I've been trying to accomplish here. I'm moving towards the ultimate goal of free energy because I seriously believe that it is possible. All right?
You know, the thing is, though, what you're talking about that you've accomplished is not really, doesn't hold any value compared to the value that you're giving people by creating the holy grail of honesty.
Well, you know,
I'm one of the people that's not trying to scam people, and it's pretty easy to spot the fact that you haven't, because you're never asking for money or anything like that, that you're not trying to scam anybody. So you're generating some goodwill to kind of counteract some of those scammers and liars enough to basically at least get them to stop and think, hey, maybe I should, you know, try to search around and find some more honest people in this community, as well as picking up those new ideas that you've got. Or I should say, some of the recycled ideas, whatever, that you keep bringing back to the table so people will try to actually use them.
Yeah, it's like this, man. You know, a car has so many parts in it. Your automobile that you get in every time you go somewhere, it has so many parts in there. You take a few of those parts out of there, it ain't gonna work, you know? And so, at some point, you had a bunch of brilliant minds that come together and say, hey, let's put this wheel with that axle, and we can actually put some weight on this and move it around, see? This is all I'm trying to do. I'm trying to show people all these different parts and saying, look, instead of like let's burying our head in the sand and saying this is the only way, let's take all these things that we already know, put them in conjunction with each other, and use this effect to get that desired effect, and so on and so forth. I honestly believe that in the right combination, all these technologies that we've already got access to would build the holy grail of free energy devices. All right, and at the very least, if nothing else comes up out of there, we're going to hit the man in his wallet hard, because if people know how to take their lights off the power grid and they're still using the heater for the power, the power grid for the heater, then so be it. But at least the man's going to take note. These guys out here, they just hit us hard.
Actually, the good thing about that idea is that they're not going to know who or what's going on. They'll have no single target to go after, because not only will they not know who the targets are, but they won't know what they're doing.
Hey, what?
They won't even realize it's going on. It's like the slow boiling of the frog. You don't start out with a boiling temperature. You start out at a warm temperature that's enjoyable.
Yep.
And then slowly raise the temperature, getting closer and closer to the boiling point, until eventually the frog is basically passing out from the heat, nice and, you know, it's getting tired and going to sleep, and then it never wakes up again.
Well, just think if there was 300 million Raymonds out there doing LED systems on their house. That's a big fat chunk of change coming out of the electric man's pocket.
Well, that's what he's kind of trying to do with the boom power thing, is to get more people to do what he's trying to do himself. And, of course, it's a lot easier if, you know, there's a profit in it to get people motivated to do something about it.
You know, here's the thing, Thomas.
I should say a value. There's a value in it that they can extract from it for themselves.
The same identical bulbs that I'm using, you can buy at Home Depot for, with sales tax, $20. But Lowe's sells them for like $23. But if you buy a lot and you buy them online, you get them cheap enough, and I can. So somebody that's got a lot of lights, I mean, I could actually, for what Home Depot charges for the bulbs, I could buy the bulbs, take it to their place of business, retrofit their fittings, because you have to rewire the fitting, I mean the fixture, and insert the bulbs for the same general price. In fact, I could do it for less, and for their electric bill, 50%.
Right.
And if anybody out there has got a big business or an office building or anything anywhere close to me, and you would need my help, contact me. I'm more than willing to help. And I don't want to make $1 billion. I just want to take my guys, create jobs. I mean, there are billions.
You're creating a value by using some smarts that you can give to. You can give some of that value back to the people who are wanting the lighting, to encourage them to get into the lighting, and give it to the people who are doing the work for them, so they don't have to stop what they're doing, because, you know, they're doing something right now to make money. If they have to stop making money to save money, then they're basically not saving any money.
I have actually set up a workspace, and I'm actually teaching all of my men how to retrofit these fittings the easiest, fastest, and simplest way, without sacrificing quality or safety at whatsoever.
Right.
And the guys, it's so easy to do that a homeowner can do it himself. But you take somebody that owns a business that's, for example, has got 250, 400 light fixtures. He can't. It would take him a year.
Right. I mean, like I said, he'd have to somebody in his company would have to stop doing what they're doing, making him money, in order to save him the money that he'd be saving off of installing those lights himself. That's not worth it for him. So he can give that extra money that he's still earning instead of trying to, you know, like let's say he's saving $15 an hour by taking some people off another job by not giving you the money. But now he's losing like $30 to $50 an hour because those people aren't doing what they were doing before. So it's worth it to him to give each of your guys $15, $20 an hour to come out there and do what they're doing.
Exactly, Thomas. Exactly. And by doing that, the money out of his pocket to retrofit and pay the labor, the bulbs, and everything pays for itself in 18 to 20 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then from then on, it's all pure profit, man's pocket. Look at all high-rise office buildings. I mean, holy cow, I've already done the figures. A high-rise office building, 18 to 20 stories high, the average building runs anywhere from 16 to 22,000 square feet per floor and 80 square feet per light fixture. You're talking 4,800 to 5,200 light fixtures. I mean, come on. Yeah.
Right.
Why would it take the
right? And even with the fluorescent lighting, even though it doesn't cost quite as much to run in, it's almost the same price as LED on the power. LED lighting lasts like, you know, between 10 and 25 years, whereas fluorescent lights only last between 1 and 5 years, depending on how you treat them.
Right.
Some gold and short will not last even that long because people like to flip them on and off.
But the thing is, the high-rise office building, the size that I just described, you're talking anywhere from $45,000 to $60,000 a month in a lighting electric bill, just for the lighting.
Is this for fluorescent lighting, though, or is this for incandescent lighting?
Huh? The existing fluorescent lights.
So you're still managing to cut that bill down more?
By 50%.
Wow.
I mean, in other words, I could save a man that owns an office building that size, I could save that man $30,000 to $35,000 a month. Think about that.
Don't have to.
Really? I mean, I don't care how rich you are. $30,000 a month savings will open anybody's eyes. And fellas out there, if you know somebody or you own a building, contact me. I'd be thrilled to death to help you. Thrilled to death to help you.
Well, I'm working on with my technology. If you can solve, I figured this out a long time ago. If you can solve the heating problem, you got the holy grail of free energy. And there's so many already existing technologies that could have already solved the heating problem. I mean, all the technology we got out there has one of the byproducts of heat that you don't want, such as your computer. You got to have heat sinks on that thing because the electronics heat up, you know, eventually destroying themselves. Incandescent light bulbs, same thing. So if you can get the heat and use the heat off of that to heat your house, that's a big old fat chunk down the drain as far as the electrical company charging you for power usage, if you understand what I'm trying to say here. So I think that this plasma technology that I'm talking about, I think that is the easiest way to step forward up towards that, because it's really super simple to make high voltage. There's a lot of technologies out there that one of the undesired effects is heat, and so we know how easy it is to produce a lot of heat, you know. So, you know, with that said, that's where I'm heading towards. And if you can produce the heat, you know, and knowing basic science, heat rises. Look at the way the Stirling engine works. There's so many different ways that you could go with that. So, I don't know. What's your guys' thoughts?
I think you're right. Man, I'm thinking,
they don't have any thoughts. I'm coasting right now.
You've said it so many times. That most people nowadays, they just don't accept it, pass over their head, they're not really thinking. The technology is already here, folks. You just got to instigate. You got to use it. You got to put it into motion. You know, like I said, I'm sitting here. I know how to retrofit these fluorescent light fixtures. I'm training my guys. Every one of my guys is going to be certified. mean, they're professionals. They know what they're doing. They do it all the time. So, consequently, if you need help, you own a big business, call me. Contact me. That dog. I mean, yeah, I'm here. I'm right here, Louisville, Texas.
Well, and it's as simple as a Skype call out here, folks. You can jump on Skype, get in contact with any one of us, and we'll point you in the direction of whatever technology out there would work for what you're trying to do. I mean, there's so much. It's that's why I get frustrated, guys. It's not that we can't do it. It's not that we don't have the technology. It's like the world is procrastinating, you know. Look at the doggone nuclear industry. It's ridiculous. We're still boiling water to produce pressure, steam pressure, that we turn turbines, which we turn around and we run a generator. The more people turn the light on, the more you got to get that water hot in order to pressurize it, and so on and so forth. But the byproduct of that is an undesired effect, is after the highly refined radioactive rods don't produce enough heat, you know, to boil the water, then they end up becoming classified as scrap. Are they totally dead? No, they're still radioactive. So why couldn't you use that energy? Because it's going to continue to be released for whatever the half-life of the material is, which generally is pretty doggone long.
Right. But
what if you weren't boiling the water to begin with? What if you didn't have to refine that to a really hot material? What if you could just take the natural radioactive, uranium out of the dirt, you know, and you could take and use that to energize, you know, something, the gas into the plasma state or whatever, you know, or even at the very least, continuously trickle charge huge banks. You see what I mean?
Yes.
It may be a case you don't even have to take it out of the dirt. If you find a hot spot in the ground, you just plug in.
Find a deposit of that stuff and buried inside of like some granite stone.
Yeah.
Not safe. That granite's not safe for humans to use for countertops and whatnot. So they just go ahead and put something in there to collect that radiation as heat into water, and then just pump that water out of there because the water's still clean.
But
in the contact the radioactive material itself, you know.
In the supposedly high-tech nuclear power industries, the nuclear power plants, and the supposedly high-tech, you're still using Stone Age plumbing in order to get what you need, the pressure build up inside there. So with Stone Age plumbing going on, there's always the potential failure. And when something fails, now you got some undesired
contamination.
Contamination. So what I'm saying is, instead of doing it the stupid way, step back and learn from the past and use some common sense. You know, take this energy technology that's been out there in existence forever and a day, and start reworking it. Start looking at a different way of using energy, as opposed to they keep hollering about fossil fuel, carbon emissions, and so on and so forth. Every time I hear these knuckleheads hollering about all this and the so-called global warming debacle, I get sick to my stomach because I'm tired of hearing it. I mean, if you're so worried about doggone fossil fuels, then why aren't you out there pushing these other technologies? And I'm not just saying, look, somebody will jump on the solar panel bandwagon. All right, hey, we're all got to go solar. We all got to go wind, you know. But they're missing out on a massive buffet of all kinds of other things that they could use in conjunction with what they're talking about. You could build a completely self-contained generator that would do everything, use all the forces of nature itself as they're naturally occurring without no waste whatsoever. I mean, if you want hydrogen, let the sun produce it for you, you know. Use your solar panels, build a really super efficient hydrogen cell. You know, there's so many possibilities. You don't have to use electrolysis to separate the hydrogen and oxygen. You can use high frequencies like Stan Myers was doing.
Like I said before, too, if you burn that, why not use a third party to burn that hydrogen and oxygen, burn it, the compound with the hydrogen first, then burn what you, the waste you get off of that with the oxygen.
Yeah.
Hey, what is correct spelling for peanut? I don't care.
P-I-E-Z-O, I believe.
P-I-E-Z-O.
Piezoelectric.
Okay. I'm going to check that out later on today.
Either way, you know, look, piezoelectric crystals, thermal couples, thermal piles, there's so many different things out there. You know, if you live in the desert, you got the perfect spot for, using heat for your energy. Now, if you live in the cold, there's a video out there I seen quite some time back where they were showing that whenever ice was freezing, it was pushing down on a piezoelectric crystal, which was actually producing current. As long as that pressure was building up on that doggone crystal, it was actually producing electricity. So even in the cold, you could get electricity.
Yeah.
It's nuts, man. They there's actually one out there somebody did a while back called Ice Battery.
That's a cool idea because the water freezes, it expands 10% size.
Yeah, and it'll cramp down on that crystal and keep pressure on it.
You know, that's how the Indians used to crack rocks. They'd find a rock, they'd crack it, fill it up with water, and put it down, and freeze parts of the rock pad.
So
actually, the Egyptians were accused of using that technology for their pyramids too, to build the blocks. they didn't find cracks; they drill holes where they want the crack to form and fill it up with water and let it crack the rock.
Right.
So what I'm pointing out ain't the hoodoo voodoo version of the Keshi plasma generator out there where you gotta love your reactor, because if you're a jerk, you don't get free electricity. You gotta be nice. All I'm saying is that the plasma that I understand is the same plasma you see inside your doggone plasma globe that you put your fingers up here on top there. Woo, pretty, you know. There's a lot of energy potential going on there, right? You put a penny on top of one of those things and try to hold your finger on there, you'll find out that penny's going to get real hot and going to burn your finger. Now, people have actually burnt holes in papers using plasma balls, right? Put a piece of metal on the opposite side and allow that energy to pass through that paper and it'll burn that paper. You know, and putting aluminum foil on the top of it, they get a charge off of the doggone thing. So,
you and I put a hole in my arm, remember?
Yep. That was
fun.
So, what I'm saying ain't science fiction, it's science fact. We've already got all the technology to build the perfect generator. It's just going to take the talents of people in some machine shops, some mathematicians, somebody who can run a CAD program real good, let the thinkers get in the room and hash it out, all the different technologies that can be added, and try it before you deny it, you know. Best way to build anything in any mad science laboratory is build it and see if the doggone thing works. If it don't work, you know, and you can't figure out why, put it aside. Maybe you can come back to it later and get it. But either way, we could get some serious moves forward, steps forward, or whatever you want to say, if we actually put that lab together that we're talking about. And hopefully this deal that I'm working on will actually do just that. You know, I'm not trying to sell anybody no doggone free energy device. I'm just trying to get some people to work in conjunction to actually put together the pieces of the puzzle that we already got and get it done. Worst case scenario, you save on your electric bill. Second worst case scenario, whatever, you know, you hit the doggone electric man in the wallet. All right. Best case scenario is we come up out of there with the holy grail of electricity, and everybody has free energy around the doggone globe. It's as simple as that, you know. You're either going to end up with some savings on your dang electric bill, or super efficiency as far as the way you use your energy, or you're going to end up having the total free energy altogether. Either way, it's a win-win, moving in the right direction. As it stands, you just got a bunch of people feuding and fighting over and getting mad at each other because somebody said something that somebody else didn't like or whatever. grow up, world. If this world is in danger of pollution, then we got to fix it, all right? If it's not in danger of pollution, then you'd like to save a few bucks, let's get together and do it, period. It's that easy. Am I wrong?
No, you're 100% correct. 100%.
Yep, there's a lot of brilliant individuals out there. There's some artistic geniuses. I feel like there's not one worthless individual in this world. That everybody has choices. They make their choices, whether they be good or bad, and it defines their life or their productivity. But I believe everybody's got a talent. Even those little sham artists out there that's always trying to make the bogus free energy devices to try to scam everybody. It took a lot of brilliance to be able to put a hidden battery down inside of a piece of wood where you flip the wood over and you can't see. There ain't nothing in there. It's not a scam. And then they tack a nail right into the battery and made the connection, made the little motor run. All right, well, somebody thought that out enough to be able to convince people that they had free energy. I'm just trying to point out you got real devices out there. The mercury arc rectifier was back in the 1800s. That was a plasma reactor. And it was also a diode. You know, churn high voltage AC into high voltage DC so it could run Edison's crappy high voltage DC electric motors. Which, today, those DC electric motors would be good generator heads.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yep, I do.
Yeah. So, I'd love to get a hold of some of Edison's old DC motors, man. Those would have been nice. Spin them backwards and you got electric power. Now, everybody out there, you got stuff in your house that you don't even know. You're sitting in a space age and you don't even understand it. You know, your doggone brand new washing machine has a state-of-the-art pulse DC stator motor in there that has enough torque to turn your dirty clothes in the water in the tub inside that doggone washing machine, whereas the old style had an electric motor with a belt and a transmission that had to slosh that water around. So you tell me, right there, you know, the hub motors that they put inside of electric bikes and stuff could be expanded on. You could make a hub motor for a car. There are cars out there. There are hub motors for cars and stuff. Why aren't we doing it? Why don't we have the perfect electric car? You want to see a cool electric car? Go look at Tesla's cool electric car. I'm talking about the modern day company called the Tesla car. That is a cool looking car, man. And it's fast, too. Now, if they can get the battery thing sorted out to where the batteries don't cost a half a billion dollars, then you'd have something there. That's why I was telling somebody one time, they were talking about, you know, the biggest portion of the car being the battery. That's the biggest cost. I said, Jack, just give me the doggone car. I'll put my own power source in that thing. Keep the battery. I don't need it. Because look at all this technology out there that Robert Murray Smith's been working on, the super cap technology. So if you can build a generator system on that doggone car when you're rolling down the road and the wheels are turning, putting juice back into that super cap, and you're transferring that energy without invoking Lenz's law, you got a doggone car that runs itself, plain and simple. If we can't do it, it's just because we ain't done it yet. That's it. It's not because it ain't possible. That's what I'm saying. What do you guys think?
Again, 100% correct. 100%. I'm totally agree with you.
Well, if we're going to be fighting war over oil, and we're going to have to listen to the doggone Save the Planet people all the time pissing and moaning about why, you know, you're cutting down trees or why you're polluting it and the planet's heating up. I'm sitting there shoveling 20 inches of snow off my driveway during the winter time, and they're telling me about global warming, and I'm getting pissed off because I'm freezing my butt off while they're talking about it's getting hot outside. All right, I ain't got time for stupid. Stupid gets on my nerves. I want common sense, move forward, get this stuff done, stop talking about it, just up and do it. If I can build it out of junk, then there ain't no reason why we couldn't do it better. I got a gizmo sitting over there in my yard. I don't know if you saw it last time you was here or not, Raymond. I've added to a little bit to it. But that thing's been running for probably about four months now. By itself, on bad batteries and capacitors, AC and DC capacitors alike. And it's taking energy from the wind, it's taking energy from the sun, it's taking energy from the dirt, it's taking radio frequencies, and it's trickle charging all those batteries. And even though those batteries won't hold a doggone charge, the light's still on after all that time. You can go out there and turn the dome light in your car on and see how long it takes for your battery to go flat.
About 12 hours.
Yeah, call me up when you need a jump start. I'm just saying, man, if I can build it out of junk, then there ain't no reason why a bunch of brilliant individuals in the right shop couldn't build whatever they needed. You know, take and use that doggone talent, that gift that you've been given by your creator, or the instantaneous big kapow in the sky that supposedly made it all, and use it for something productive. People waste all kinds of energy running their mouth, hollering about whether or not there is or isn't a God, or hollering about whether or not we did or didn't come from monkeys. I'm telling y'all right now, I ain't no monkey, you know, and my ancestors weren't monkeys, but I'm watching a whole bunch of monkeys running this world. Ain't nothing funnier than giving a monkey a gun, huh? They got their finger on the big red button.
Yeah.
Anybody understand what it is I'm talking about?
I do. I understand exactly what you're saying.
I mean, you know, we want to make the world a better place. I don't want people over there in what they classify third world countries starving to death. I don't want people freezing on the other side over there. I don't want people doing without lights or food or whatever they need to survive. There ain't no doggone reason for it. This is totally uncalled for. There is absolutely no reason for anybody in this world to have to do without. Now, the stingy, selfish, no-good-for-nothing, low-down, chicken-thieving so-called representatives of this world are sitting there telling you out of one side of their neck that they care about you and your children and they want to make this world safe for you, while they're creating a boogeyman on this side and telling you the Bigfoot's going to get you over there. And look out for the aliens, because they're coming down to get you as well. All right? They ain't accomplished nothing. They blew up a whole lot of stuff. Sold a lot of ammunition, sold a lot of medical supplies, and stole a lot of stuff in the process. And you paid for it. What do you think? It come right out of your tax pocket.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Make me want to drive me to drink, and I just want to get up there in the middle of Congress and start a fist fight. That's why I look at some of these videos.
Man. I'm trying to remember, there's actually a fiction story about an alternate world where the entire country was libertarian-based, didn't deviate from that. Like when George Washington in that world rode out to try to arrest those moonshiners for not paying their taxes on that liquor that they were making, whatever you want to call it that they were making, the people in the government system and the people pushing the government system basically arrested him for something for going and arresting somebody over something unconstitutional.
Yeah.
And you know, like basically everything just took a complete different turn of events, and they only had Congress getting together I think like 7 times since the start of the country.
Have you ever?
They only came together when they had to, and their system worked that much better. But when they did, they were all the congressmen and all the representatives showed up with handguns hanging off their belt, and they actually had drinking and fighting occasionally here and there in the actual each event. Like each event had at least 2 or 3 fist fights.
tank before they figured out whatever it was that they were wanting to solve, because they only got together over things that were really heated issues that needed to be solved.
Well, have you noticed how every single senator, representative, law enforcement agent, and all the alphabet soup folks out there raise their hand and swear an oath to uphold the Constitution, and the moment they get in office, the first thing they do is violate it?
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right, so... If Pete and Repeat's on a boat and Pete falls out, who's going to be left?
You.
I'm just sick of it, man. I want to get something done, and I'm doing what I can over here. I'm using whatever resources I got. See, you know, I could have a long time ago, I could have sold out and went ahead and give somebody else the technology, fattened up my wallet, and moved along, you know. I didn't have to spend no money on trying to do a radio show or anything like that. I could have just gave somebody all my ideas and they give me a few bucks, and then I'm sitting pretty the rest of my life. But in the same sense, I just went against every single thing that I stand for. You know, I want to see this doggone world a better place. I want to see people in this world not having to suffer. And when guys Keshi out there taking money from people, telling them, yeah, you get all this and that, whatever, and not producing what it is. They've been talking about it forever and a day. You come out, he said, oh, well, here's your free energy. It's still not here. You still don't have it on the table. All right? And there's still people over there starving to death. And there's all kinds of excuses why it is, oh, well, you know, we got attacked by government agents and so far and so on and so forth. Dude, if the doggone information's for real, if it is legit, set it on the table to one of these real researchers. Raymond wouldn't mind checking one of those out. I wouldn't mind checking one of those out. And we could give you an honest update. But that's not the way it's going down. He's selling these things for 900 euros or something like that. And you got to buy two other people in the world one. So your 900 euros gets you one and gets two other people one. And so far, they ain't done nothing but use it like a battery. It ain't no doggone free energy
device. Well, that whole every one you buy gets two other people one for free, I think is just a scam to get people to believe that they're an honest, what do you call it, drawing a bright blank here.
Do you know what a doggone...
They're philanthropic. They're not trying to earn money.
Do you know what a doggone... A battery backup is for your computer, what they call those doggone thing, APCs.
UPS.
Yeah.
APC is a company name. UPS. It stands for Uninterrupted Power Supply.
All right. Well, there you go. Look, that's what he's got. That's what he's got without the circuitry in there that detects the low voltage of the battery. That's all he's got. You plug it into the wall, and it runs the AC over there, and your load is actually being pulled off the battery, and all your mains is doing is actually putting juice into the deal. That's all it is.
Right.
But you can't run no heaters off of it. You can't run no resistive loads. Right now all you can run is like LED systems and doggone small appliances.
A simple battery would run for days.
Yeah. So he's ripping people off, and it gets on my doggone nerves,
man. The fact that you can't unplug it and plug it into itself shows that it's a load of hogwash.
Yeah. Either way,
like people keep saying about, oh, I've got a magnet generator system that works. I got a magnet generator system that works. Well, then, a motor generator system that works. A motor generator system works. Well, then, after you put a little bit in there into the capacitive banks or whatever it is you're using for your storage, disconnect it from the wall and plug it into itself, and let's see how long it runs.
Yeah, it won't.
You know, right. It was all those because of the storage that they've got built into them in order to run the delay system. They will run for a while, but they won't run for very long. You get two things you have to look at that seem to be the biggest ones that everybody seems to be missing. The capacitive system that's required in order to slow it down, and a flywheel effect.
Why?
You gotta watch for those two, because they'll store power that you won't notice. The flywheel's the big one. you know, the weight of the rotating device will keep it, a body in motion tends to stay in motion, a body at rest tends to stay at rest.
Yep.
So.
Well, either way, what you won't ever hear on ShazizRadio.com or Shaziz YouTube, you won't ever hear me asking you for money for research. You won't ever hear me asking for donations or for money for plans or anything like that. I put it out here on the podcast page and on YouTube. I put it out there. The idea's out there for free to whoever wants to look at it. It's up to you, whatever you want to do with it from that point on. But when I talk about free energy, I mean free energy. When's the last time you ever got a bill from the sun or the wind or the water or whatever? You know, instead of putting all your eggs in one basket, instead of buying some sort of bogus plans that turn around, once you get them put together and they don't seem to work like they said they were, they turn around and tell you, well, that's your fault, you did it wrong. And that's essentially what's going on out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It makes the rest of us who's actually really trying to make a difference look bad. Raymond can show you.
That's why a certain person who shall remain nameless so we don't get any fighting going on here or bad feelings did so well in the free energy world was he was busy debunking those people. And he did it with some flair, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
He liked to use colorful adjectives and whatnot.
Well, Raymond can show you how to do the LED lighting systems. YouTube, you can Google it on there. YouTube, there's all kinds of other ways to save on your energy. And I'm saying, all right, to get this out of the doggone gate, the very first thing everybody should be doing is listening in is start figuring out ways to take your lighting off the power grid just as one light bulb at a time.
Yeah, save yourself some money and reinvest that money that you save back into bumping it up every month.
Yep.
So you're saving even more. It's like basically putting your interest back into the bank so you can earn even more interest.
When it's all said and done and all this information comes to the top, you'll have the money in your pocket to build your own personal generator and then take your whole entire doggone house off the power grid. You know?
Well, you need a cheap source, too, for looking at, like, say, solar. Anybody who wants that, just get on here and let me know, and I'll post you some links for some of the, like the most unbelievable deals you can get on solar cells that you can get on like say eBay. The sellers that have got them there, I mean, you think, oh well, you know, because they're so cheap, it's because there's something wrong with them. Well, there is something wrong with them, but it's cosmetic only.
Well, let me point this out.
It's a brand new U.S. made solar cell that's never been installed, never had light shining on it, drawing power off it. It's, you know, just got dropped in a crack off the corner or something.
Let me put something else to what you just said there, Thomas. Before everybody puts the stink eye on old solar panels, even the ones that have been used and abused and totally, thrown out and rejected, Raymond brought me over two solar panels that were rolled up like a carpet. The glass is all busted and cracked, and they've been sitting out there in the doggone rain, and they're still producing electricity.
Yep.
Now, are they as 100% efficient as they would have been if they come right off the shelf? Nope, but they are still producing electricity, regardless, even if it's only a little bit. Man, I was getting over 100 volts DC. There's different ways that you can wire those things on the back. There's several prongs on the back. You can go from anywhere from 12 volts all the way up to 36 or all the way up to over 100 volts DC off of this doggone thing.
Yeah, sure is.
Yeah.
Guess what? I got some good news for you.
Yeah.
Next time I come, I'll bring 15 more up for you.
Well, cool. See, most people would have looked at those and they're like, hey, well, those are trash. What can you do with that? Store it. Store the energy. I mean, there's plenty of ways to do it. And go look at the doggone Elmer Laser Hacker's YouTube channel and watch his doggone video, how simple it is to make a doggone, use two plates of aluminum, some activated carbon that he ground up in an old coffee mill, and some sulfuric acid, and then sealed it up in a deal and charged it up. In 10 seconds, he had it fully charged, and it ran for 10 minutes. So, you tell me.
Well, hey, what about my coffee cup salt water battery?
Yeah, and I ain't gave up on that. That other device you brought over here, the turns it into fog or mist or whatever you call that.
Yeah. Oh man, that's cool.
Yeah.
It's a sonic mister, sonic humidifier. It uses sound waves or frequency instead of heat to turn water into an atomized form. It's still water, but it's teeny tiny droplets. So lightweight, it floats in the air.
Yep. And so, basically, I want to get a hold of one because I want to build a doggone hydrogen cell. Because I understand how Stan Myers was doing his work. And I think that technology combined with some high voltage technology can literally get hydrogen on demand. And what do you say that thing costs? What, $26 for one of those deals or something like that?
That included shipping and handling and everything.
Yeah. So, there you go. Being able to split oxygen and hydrogen away from each other out of the water molecule is going to be a whole lot simpler when it's all up in a tiny fog mist, just exactly how Stan Myers was doing it. And you're not having to use the electrolysis process, which takes a whole lot of amperage to do it. So that's why his dune buggy was running in 1979. And that's
wait. By the way, she says I did some testing on that sonic humidifier.
Yeah.
And it will work on what they call modified sine wave inverters. In other words, you can take the 12-volt modified sine wave inverters that you buy at Home Depot for $75-$80 and plug it into that and put that to your battery, and it will still make the mist. Now, one of the experiments I did is I took that mist and run it through my air breather. So the mist water would go into my air breather into the cylinder. And we all know that water, when it turns to steam, expands four times as much as gasoline. So that extra expansion creates more power in the motor. I hooked that sucker up to one of my trucks that gets 18 miles to the gallon. And I drove it about 60 or 80 miles and tested the mileage. Was getting 25 miles to the gallon. Increased my gas by 7 miles to the gallon, and in 60 miles, I did not burn a quart of water.
Well, there you go. Well, guys and gals out there, that's going to be a short one today because I'm getting a new hot water heater put in my house, and I got to be there to assist my buddy who's putting it in for me. So, with that said, we don't get to go with no overdrive today. It's kind of bummed me out, but we'll make up for it tomorrow on the Knights of the Roundtable if anybody's interested. Jump over there to shazizradio.com/superchat.html and become an honorary knight just by posting pertinent links in the chat room. If you want to join in on the conversation, all we ask is for people to be respectful to one another. We can agree to disagree, but you notice that when these guys that I'm talking to right here are out here, when we disagree, we don't have to cuss each other out or degrade each other. We just try to troubleshoot through it and try to find a midway point,
right.
A solution.
No using explicatives to overcome your lack of remembering proper term you want to use.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
What happened there? Did I lose you guys?
I'm still here.
Oh. Somebody said, can they ask a question? And I was like, okay.
Hold on a minute. He's here. Wait, his name is Ron.
Oh, it's been a month ago, but if I contributed once while we were talking, does that make me an honorary knight?
Sure does.
All right. I consider that a privilege.
It is. It's an honor.
All right, folks. Well, that pretty much wraps it up for the Mad Science Show today. Did you say his name's Ron?
Ron Perry, yeah.
Ron, you ought to jump in here and join us tomorrow if Raymond happens to be around on the nights, if you got the opportunity. Love to have you there. It's all about solutions and trying to make this world a better place, folks. So with that said, peace and love. You've been listening to the Mad Science Show. Jump over to shazizradio.com and say hi to all these people. If you go to the superchat.html room over there, you get to talk to two different chat rooms at one time and interact with those folks. Make them connections. Like Thomas is always saying, it's about networking and bringing these brilliant people together and getting things done. I mean, that's what you know, that's the only way it's going to happen. So, peace and love, everybody. Take care.
We're off the air.
Is my creation fly?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.